completely got a C, and Houston ISD as a whole received a B. In the last 19 months, HISD has made positive strides reducing the number of its campuses with D or F ratings from 50 to 10. 94% of HISD schools now earn a grade of A, B, or C. For the rest of the story, please go to texastribune.org. This is Steve Gallington of the People's News, which can be heard on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. on 90.1 KPFT HD2, Houston's community radio.
Hi, this is Hank Rubicek, producer and lead host to So What's Your Story, and you are listening to KPFT, Houston's community station.
Sweet feet, clouds bend low your knees. Ray Lynch chimes in. You know, you have tuned in for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's found only on Houston's community station, KPFT. That's right, you found us again, or perhaps you found us for the first time. My name is Larry Thompson, and I'm tonight's host, and here we celebrate the power of story by placing a spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on voyages through windows of their souls and on fanciful excursions amid worlds of enchantment before hopefully returning us safely to the present. Now you've tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or maybe even your phone to 90.1 on HD1 KPFT, Houston's community station, to hear So What's Your Story. You know, just a couple of weeks ago on the 8th of March, we celebrated International Women's Day. And I thought I'd commemorate that day on my show tonight. Women's Day is, of course, for all women, but tonight I want to highlight a special set of women whom we've all most likely known, one of these at least, and that would be mamas. Now, I know mothers have their own holiday in a couple of months, don't they? But having recently lost my own mother, I thought I would take a few minutes to bring you some mama stories, and then I'll share about her a little bit, and it's important for you to realize that even storytellers have mama, lest you think we're all hatched from oversized eggs or something. And we'll begin with a fantastic tale from New Mexico storyteller Joe Hayes. Now, Joe's fresh off a fabulous outing as a featured teller at the most recent Texas Storytelling Festival in Denton earlier in March. And this story, what's called Don't Say a Word, Mama. And Joe effortlessly weaves in his Spanish phrases in his own personal bilingual style. Here's Don't Say a Word, Mama by our dear friend Joe Hayes.
Now this is the story of two sisters who were very, very close. One of the girls was named Rosa. The other girl, her name was Blanca. They loved each other very much. Sometimes their mother would tell Rosa to go down to the store to buy some flour so that she could make tortillas for their supper. If she did, Blanca would say, "Espérate, Rosa, yo voy contigo." "Wait up," she would say, "I'll go with you." And they would go to the store together. Or sometimes their mother would tell Blanca to sweep the sidewalk in front of the house. If she did, Rosa would say, "Espérate, Blanca, yo te ayudo." "Wait up," she would say, "I'll help you." Their mother was so proud of those girls. She would always say, "My daughters are so good to each other. I think I'm the luckiest mom in the town." No, I'm the luckiest mom in the country. No, soy la mamá más afortunada de todo el mundo. I'm the luckiest mom in the whole wide world. Well, when Rosa grew up, she got married. She and her husband had 3 children, and they lived in a small house just down the street from her mother. When Blanca grew up, she didn't get married. She lived all by herself in a small house just up the street from her mother. One year, each sister planted a garden. They planted tomatoes. They planted corn. And they planted lots of good, hot chili. When the tomatoes were fat and round and ripe, Rosa helped Blanca pick the tomatoes in her garden. Blanca helped Rosa pick the tomatoes in her garden. And of course, Rosa took some of her tomatoes to her old mother. And she said, "Mama, my sister Blanca lives all by herself with no one to help her. I have a husband and 3 helpful children. So I'm going to give half of my tomatoes to my sister. But I want it to be a surprise. Don't say a word, Mama." And of course, Blanca took some of her tomatoes to her old mother. And she said, "Mama, my sister Rosa has a husband and 3 children. There are 5 people to feed in her house, and I don't have anybody but myself. So I'm going to give half of my tomatoes to my sister. But I want it to be a surprise. No digas nada, Mama." That night, Rosa filled a basket with tomatoes, and she started toward Blanca's house. Blanca filled a basket with tomatoes, and she started toward Rosa's house. The night was dark. The sisters didn't see each other when they passed right in front of their mother's house. Rosa added the tomatoes from her basket to the tomatoes that were in Blanca's kitchen. Blanca added the tomatoes from her basket to the tomatoes that were in Rosa's kitchen. The next morning, when Rosa saw how many tomatoes she still had, she said, "Oh my goodness, how can I have so many tomatoes? Did each tomato have a baby during the night? I'll give some more tomatoes to my mother." And when Blanca saw how many tomatoes she had in her kitchen, she said, "Híjole, ¿cómo es que tengo tantos tomates? Did each tomato get so fat that it split in 2? I better give some more tomatoes to my mother." And when their mother saw the big pile of tomatoes she had in her kitchen, she shrugged her shoulders and she said, "Oh, well, you can never have too many tomatoes." And then the ears of corn got full and firm on the corn stalks. Rosa helped Blanca pick the corn in her garden. Blanca helped Rosa pick the corn in her garden. Rosa took some of her corn to her old mother, and she said, "Mama, I'm going to give half of my ears of corn to my sister Blanca, but I want it to be a surprise. Don't say a word, Mama." And Blanca took some of her corn to her old mother. She said, "Mama, I'm going to give half of my ears of corn to my sister Rosa, but I want it to be a surprise. No digas nada, mama. That night, Rosa filled a basket with ears of corn. She started toward Blanca's house. Blanca filled a basket with ears of corn. She started toward Rosa's house. The night was dark. The sisters didn't see each other when they passed right in front of their mother's house. Rosa added the corn from her basket to the corn that was in Blanca's kitchen. Blanca added the corn from her basket to the corn that was in Rosa's kitchen. The next morning, when Rosa saw how many ears of corn she had, she said, "Oh my goodness! How can I have so many ears of corn? Did each ear of corn get married and bring home a wife? I'll give some more corn to my mother." And when Blanca saw how many ears of corn she had, she said, "Híjole, ¿cómo es que tengo tantos elotes? Did each ear of corn invite a friend to come and spend the night last night? I'll give some more corn to my mother." And when their mother saw the big pile of corn she ended up with, she shrugged her shoulders and said, "Oh, well, you can never have too much corn." And then the chili got hot and red and ripe on the chili vines. And so Rosa helped Blanca pick the chili in her garden. Blanca helped Rosa pick the chili in her garden. Rosa took some of her red chili to her mother, and she said, "Mama, I'm going to give half of my chili to my sister, but it's a surprise. Don't say a word, Mama." Blanca took some of her chili to her mother. She said, "Mama, I'm going to give half of my chili to my sister, but it's a surprise. No digas nada, Mama." That night, Rosa filled a basket with hot red chili, and she started toward Blanca's house. Blanca filled a basket with hot red chili, and she started toward Rosa's house. The night was dark. The sisters didn't see each other. But all of a sudden, the sidewalk lit up like there were 1,000 cameras flashing at the same time. There were light bulbs up in the trees. There were light bulbs in the bushes. There were light bulbs all over the front of the house. And light came pouring out of the windows of the house. And out of the door of the house came their mother, banging the bottom of her pozole pot with a big wooden spoon. And Rosa said, "Oh, my goodness," and threw her hands into the air. And Blanca said, "Híjole," y se tiró las manos al aire. And red chili went flying in every direction. Rosa said, "Mama, what are you doing out of bed at this hour of the night?" And Blanca said, "And Mom, why are you waking up the whole neighborhood with all of that noise?" And their mother said, "Well, I promised that I wouldn't say a word, but I had to do something because, you know, you can never have too many tomatoes, and you can never have too much corn. But what was I going to do with all that hot chili?" Just then, each sister noticed the basket the other one was carrying, and they figured out what had been happening. Rosa said, "Oh, now I know why I still had so many tomatoes." And Blanca said, "Oh, now I know why I still had so much corn." And their mother said, and I know why I am always saying, my daughters are so good to each other. I think I'm the luckiest mom in the town. No, I'm the luckiest mom in the country. No, soy la mamá más afortunada de todo el mundo. I'm the luckiest mom in the whole wide world.
Now, how about that from Mr. Joe Hayes, talking about the luckiest mother in the whole wide world? That's quite a story there, Joe. Now, let's hear a story from a good friend of the show, Ms. Toni Simmons. And by the way, she is the most recent TSA Finley Stewart Trailblazing Award recipient. Congratulations, Toni. Now, she's going to take us on a romp with this tale that includes some singing. This is The Baby Lady.
Miss Allen, Miss Allen, come quick, come quick. The baby's coming, the baby's coming. That was the call Miss Ellen Sturp heard many times. People all over Coconut Grove would come calling for her whenever someone was in labor because she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady. Baby lady, she was the midwife. Yes, Miss Ellen Sturp was a midwife in Coconut Grove, Florida for over 35 years. She delivered hundreds of babies, or as they would say, brought into this world. Now that was the way it was, especially in the days of segregation in the Black communities of Miami-Dade County, Florida. Black patients were segregated in city hospitals and were kept in unclean, dilapidated, and mostly undesirable areas of the hospitals. Because of this racism and because of the unavailability of doctors during those times, women preferred their own midwives, someone they could trust, someone they could depend on. Someone like Miss Ellen, because she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the midwife. Now, during this time, Bahamians had immigrated to Miami, and many settled in the Coconut Grove area. Brought with them their old midwives, their own healing styles, their own remedies. Miss Ellen came to Miami in 1910 from the Bahamas, and she had been trained by her mother, Charlotte, who was also a midwife. Now, Miss Ellen was a pretty woman with fair skin and long black wavy hair that she wore pinned up in a big bun with those large hairpins. Now, don't mistake her prettiness for softness. Mm-mm. She was known to get anybody straight if things weren't right. Miss Ellen rode a bicycle with a big wooden basket in the front. And when going on deliveries, she'd carry food in the basket, her little black bag, and a big pot of hot water. She carried the food because many times the families didn't have anything to eat. And she carried the pot of hot water because often there was no indoor plumbing and you'd have to wait for someone to get the water and for it to be heated. Miss Ellen would visit her patients for 9 days or more after delivery, making sure things were right with the babies and the mothers. Oh, she loved her work. And the patients loved her because she was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. Now, sometime later on, Miss Ellen sent for her mother, Charlotte Ingram, from the Bahamas. And they both worked in Coconut Grove and South Miami area as midwives. Miss Charlotte would walk to her deliveries, and she wore a long white starch apron. She carried a little black bag too. Sometimes she and Miss Ellen would go together with their little black bags. Sometimes they had to stay late into the night waiting for delivery. In the summer of 1931, Miss Ellen delivered her first set of twins. It was June 22nd. And the mother, Miss Maggie, had gone to work that day as a housekeeper. Or in those days, they said she did day's work. Late that night, she went into labor and someone came running for Miss Ellen. She jumped on her bicycle and rode the 2 or 3 blocks to Charles Avenue. She got there in time and delivered the first baby. It was a girl, weighing about 5 or 6 pounds. She waited and waited and waited for the placenta to come. An hour and 45 minutes later, she realized it wasn't a placenta, it was another baby. This time, it was a boy, but he only weighed about 2 or 3 pounds. Everyone in the room was silent, almost holding their breath. They thought he was stillborn. Someone even sent for the mortician. But finally, the baby cried. Miss Ellen put the babies in her dresser drawer. She and Miss Charlotte taught their patients to use boxes and dresser drawers as cribs. Oh, Miss Ellen also delivered a set of triplets. Nothing was too much for her because she was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. Now, you've often heard about fathers being nervous during labor, about them panicking or even fainting. Well, Miss Ellen had a patient whose husband got so excited when she went into labor, he just lost his mind. He ran out of the house screaming and locked the door behind him and ran down the road. Well, someone came and got Miss Ellen. She got to the house. She could hear the mother in there screaming, but she couldn't get in. She had to get someone to break the door down. She got in time and delivered the baby. Now, even though Miss Ellen's patients loved her, some white doctors didn't like the fact of having the black midwives around. One said, when a woman is at her most needy time, she's often at the mercy of some coarse old dame or ignorant black granny. Another called them a necessary evil that had to be controlled and regulated. Well, regulation meant required education, licensing, elimination. The state sent white nurses to teach and train the midwives. They set up midwife clubs. Miss Ellen was the president of one. Oh, the practice of midwives had been transformed from a cultural one to a newly regulated one. But that wasn't all. After licensing, there were still many other rules to follow. Filing a birth certificate was one. The certificates had to be perfect with no errors. And the recording was done by hand. Miss Ellen's daughter, Vernica, did the recording for the certificates for her patients. But when trying to file them, they were always trying to find some mistakes, some errors. Now, I told you that Miss Ellen was no pushover. I could hear her now with that thick Bahamian accent. Oh, just insisting and saying, "Man, it ain't so." All of this didn't stop Miss Ellen, though, because she was a baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. Now, Miss Ellen continued her practice until 1966. And even though she didn't pass on her gift to her daughter, she was allowed to be in the delivery room of the hospital when her daughter had her baby. And that baby was me. Talking about the baby lady, baby lady, the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. My grandmother, Ellen Stir.
Well, there you go. That was one of those stories that had sort of a twist at the end. I sure enjoy hearing Tony and her storytelling. If you get to hear her in person, you know, she does get around these parts to tell stories. You make sure you make a point of hearing her tell a story like that in person. Now, we're talking about mothers tonight, and my good friend Mark Twain once said of mothers, he said, "My mother had a great deal of trouble with me, but I think she enjoyed it." And I think I could have said that about my mother too. Perhaps most of us could. But sometimes we need to be reminded that being a mother isn't always easy or enjoyable or without the occasional challenge, let's say. Now, from the Piney Woods, Ms. Darlene Dufour gives us a fantastic example of this with her story of her mother's first attempts at learning to drive.
I grew up in the 1950s in rural Louisiana. That was before air conditioning, cell phones, computers, and television. Back in those days, most families owned one car that the husband drove to work. Wives took care of preserving the food, the home, and the family, with a garden for fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, and a cow for milk and butter, chickens for eggs, and a freezer stocked with meat. Women went to town to shop for staples once or twice a month. On shopping day, the wives took their husbands to work, then used the car to pay bills, run errands, and grocery shop. However, in my family, Daddy decreed that Mama would not drive. It wasn't for meanness, you understand, but for her own protection. You see, Mama had fainting spells. I especially remember the spell Mama had one hot Sunday morning. I was sitting in the third pew at Pleasant Hill Baptist Church. Mama was singing in the choir, and I saw her drop the Broadman hymnal and sink below the choir rail. The service stopped. Everyone, including the preacher, was staring at Mama. Two big busted ladies in flowered dresses hovered over Mama, fanning her with their handkerchiefs. "Aren't you scared?" my friend Eva Phillips whispered. "Heck no, she does this all the time," I said. "That's why Daddy won't let her drive the car. It's just one of her fainting spells. She'll be all right in a minute." I quoted my daddy pretty much. In truth, those spells always frightened me a lot more than I let on. Well, eventually the doctor learned that Mama was anemic. She took vitamin B12 shots for a long time, and that stopped her fainting spells. But Daddy wasn't convinced. The last time I heard her ask Daddy to teach her to drive, he said, no. What if you had one of your fainting spells while you were at the wheel? Why, you'd kill yourself. Now, don't ask me again. She didn't. My daddy worked for the Rock Island Railroad, but he had a lifelong love affair with automobiles. He was an excellent mechanic, and he often brought home a car to repair it for a friend or coworker. So we weren't surprised the day Daddy towed home a black 1948 Plymouth and parked it in the yard. He came in the house and said, I put chocks under the wheels of that Plymouth to keep it from rolling, and I don't want anybody driving that car. Well, the next week, Daddy started working a lot of overtime, and it was dark when he got home, so he didn't have time to work on the Plymouth. I noticed that Mama seemed especially interested in that car, and once I caught her sitting in the driver's seat mumbling, this is the clutch, this is the brake. Even so, I was surprised the afternoon Mama called me outside and said, I'm going to learn how to drive this car and I want you to help me. But what about your fainting spells? I haven't had one in a year and the doctor said I can drive if I want to. I was relieved. If the doctor said it in 1950, it was gospel. When I get in the car, Mama said, you pull those chocks away from the wheel, then run, get on the porch so I won't run over you. That was pretty much incentive for me. I followed Mama's orders and everything went just as she said it would. From then on, as soon as I got home from school, Mama took her position behind the steering wheel. At her nod, I pulled the chocks from under the tires and scrambled out of the way. At first, she was careful to guide the car in the loop in the dirt drive that Daddy's tires had dug. At first, she had to make several extra loops, but she got the hang pretty soon of taking her foot off the accelerator and pumping the clutch and the brake pedals furiously until the car coasted to a stop exactly where Daddy had parked it. Now, remember, she said, this is our secret. Don't tell your daddy. She needn't have worried. This was one time I didn't want to be around when Daddy found out what was going on. I'd heard him say that nobody was to drive that car. I already felt like a traitor, but I had to admit, Mama's driving looked pretty good to me. After all, she hadn't hit the house or any pine trees. Well, Mama's confidence increased day, and one day she said, I'm going to drive to Kathleen's house. Kathleen Brunson was our nearest neighbor, about halfway down the road. I still can't back up, Mama said, but if I make a loop in the empty field by Kathleen's, the car will be headed home and I won't have to turn it around. Mama's concentration was as great as a Grand Prix driver. At her signal, I yanked the chocks away from the wheels and climbed in the open passenger door and slammed it shut. Mama took a deep breath and turned the ignition. The engine caught the first time. Slowly, slowly, she let out the clutch and ground the shift into first gear. I thought Mama looked funny reaching to the poor floor pedals, but a look on her face warned me it wouldn't be too smart to laugh. The Plymouth slid forward like cold ketchup. Mama made a trial run through her usual loop and then headed the car down our dusty drive. She had a death grip on the steering wheel. We went down our dirt driveway over the cattle gap and turned onto the gravel road. Mama's face was beaming with triumph. I felt the car pick up speed and glanced at the speedometer. Mama was up to 10 miles an hour, the fastest she'd ever driven. As we neared Kathleen's, Mama took her foot off the gas pedal and began pumping the clutch and the brake to let the car come to a stop. Even I could see that Mama was getting good at judging the stopping distance. Our maiden excursion went without mishap. Kathleen was properly impressed with Mama's new skill, and she promised to keep her secret. We made it back home without anybody seeing us, and after that, we made several more trips down to Kathleen's. Things were going fine until the afternoon Daddy got off work early. He parked his pickup and walked over to the Plymouth. I saw him look at the back tires. Then he inspected the front tires. Saw him frown and he started toward the back of that car again. The more Daddy looked at that car, the more scared I got. I got whipped when I disobeyed Daddy. Would Mama get whipped too? And even more important, would I get whipped for keeping her secret? I ran into the house and alerted Mama only seconds before Daddy stomped up the steps and demanded, "Who's been driving that Plymouth?" To my surprise, Mama looked him straight in the eye and said, "I have. I don't have fainting spells anymore, and the doctor said I could learn to drive." Daddy's face looked like a reddish. He opened his mouth and shut it. He was trying to speak, but Mama was on a roll. "I asked you to teach me to drive, but you told me don't ask you again, so I didn't. I taught myself." When she finally ran down, I held my breath waiting for Daddy to erupt. To my surprise, he took Mama in his arms and pulled her close. And when he spoke, his voice had gone from gruff to gentle. "Oh, honey, I bought that old Plymouth for you, and I intended to teach you to drive it." Mama knew she had him then. "Then why did you tell me not to drive it?" "I didn't want anyone driving the car until I got it fixed. The car runs fine. It starts every time." "I know," Daddy agreed. "There's nothing wrong with the motor." "Then why'd you tell me not to drive it?" "Because it doesn't have any brakes." Mama fainted.
Well, there you go. That story brings a smile to my face every time I hear it. Can you just imagine? Well, anyhow, this is Larry Thompson. You've been hearing from featured storyteller Joe Hayes, from Darlene Dufour with that last story, and from Tony Simmons before that. And you're listening to So What's Your Story, only on HD1 KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station. And of course, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. Don't forget HD free internet, HD2 KPFT's free internet. It meets your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We are so proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell. Stories like you're hearing tonight from Joe and Tony and Darlene. And you tune in to Houston's community station because you know you're going to hear the finest and the widest variety of programming in Houston. And remember, this is member-supported station. It's people just like you that make all this possible. Folks like you, and, well, we better talk about our sponsor, too, the Houston Storytellers Guild. That's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The next swap is just around the corner. You can visit the Guild's website, www.HoustonStorytellers.org. They got a Zoom link there. You can find information on all their upcoming events. By the way, right there on that website is So What's Your Story's archive of shows since 2008. You'll find them right there on the menu under radio programs. And our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live, why, they're back in full swing the second Tuesday of the month, and you'll enjoy astonishing stories and get to know Houston storytelling community. Another way to crank up your storytelling skills. You can hook up with the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Like I always say, storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. So even if you're way out there past the confines of the Grand Parkway, you can find storytelling peeps of all kinds. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my own dear Iowa-born mother passed away a few months back. Now, as a storyteller, I feel obliged to share a few details of her life with y'all. And of course, being the favorite child, I'm uniquely suited to the task. I've got many fond memories, of course, but my all-time best memory is that memory of walking home from elementary school in the fall of the year, the air damp from rain, leaves blown in the street with a cold wind behind them, and me scrambling up the back stairs to the house, already able to smell a fresh batch of chocolate chip cookies coming right out of the oven just in time. And what else would you expect from the 1974 Putnam County Homemaker of the Year? I can still remember that parade scene with my father slowly driving his convertible Volkswagen Karmann Ghia with the top down and my mother precariously perched on top the back seats in a homemade pink gingham sack dress complete with shoulder poofs and an accompanying equally handmade pink gingham parasol. My sister, she's been handling all the affairs after my mother's passing, and she sent me 3 giant boxes of assorted memories and keepsakes just the other day. Now, included in the boxes were a variety of old photos. My mother was the youngest of 3 and a full 20 years younger than her oldest sister. There were also copies of her poetry and other writings, and 1 of her paintings. And one folder included some letters. They had been carefully typed out, transcribed from one of her journals. My mother was always writing with a distinctive penmanship I can still recognize today. Most notable among the letters were a few that my mother had written as a kind of therapy. They were letters written to my father after his death in 1979. I'll share one with you. Dear Leo, how academic it all seems now as I look back over the entwining years. I had a really good time, the best in my life, and now it's over. I know that I need to let it go, but I can't seem to release this need of your comfort, your understanding. Sometimes I get really angry at myself for not taking control of situations. Then I forget about my steel rod down my spine and I let myself turn to jelly and make a big blob on the floor of my life. I can almost hear your laughter. Your blue eyes would crinkle around the edges as you grab me, hold me tight against you, so I could hear your slow and steady heartbeat and calm myself. I know that when you had me calm, you would turn me around and shove me back into the world. I knew you would be standing nearby, ready to come to my rescue if I should need it. You were my mentor and my cheerleader. How strange to realize that I had only existed until you came into my life. I, who prided myself on being my own woman, didn't need or want anyone to boss me around. I was an adult, independent, stubborn, and anxious for my freedom. When I became aware of you, I was 17 years old and already planning my life. Dear friend, it certainly didn't include a man and marriage. You must have been crazy to think that you could just walk into my life and take it over. But then you were always very arrogant and stubborn, for you were only 20 years old and felt the need to take this child woman, protect her and care for her. You said you thought I looked fragile and innocent, needing a keeper. You applied for a job that didn't even exist. Your kindness and protective love allowed me to become a strong, capable young woman who would just begin to search into what life was about. I know that I'm going to make it somehow, but not exactly sure how. The emptiness in me seems to rattle around inside a broken heart. Will it ever mend? Do I want it mended? The days keep passing by, giving no thought to my grieving face. The sun shines and the clouds gather. How can the world just go on? Your loving wife, D. Well, it's no wonder I'm a writer and storyteller myself, I suppose. Remind me one of these days, and I'll tell you the story of their honeymoon in the Great Smoky Mountains. But for now, here's a little piece of cowboy poetry I put together a few years back for Mother's Day. This is called Fall from Grace. When I was young, a big red pony filled my every dream. In furry chaps, I saw myself crossing desert, hill, and stream. I knew already the name I'd give, for I saw that pony's face. In my dreams, she'd trot on over when she heard me holler, Grace! I knew my skills were not the best on a ride more than three hands high. Those dime store ponies with a quarter slot had been my only ride. I figured with a name like Grace, my mother's fears would calm. If I happened to be thrown off that filly, I had the perfect balm. I'd brush me off and stand up straight, wiping dirt off of my face, and say to her with thumbs tucked in, it was just a fall from grace. Well, I knew that line would make her laugh and would ease her mother some worry. I'd just give a whistle and leap back on and ride off with a flurry. But the landscape of my dreams were never converted into truth. Me and Grace never rode the range that I yearned for in my youth. Scarcely remember that long ago dream of a red filly known as Grace. Those youthful dreams slowly faded with age, like the softness of my face. Oh, there's no regret that I never took that fateful fall from grace. Just sad I never got to use that line to bring a smile to my mother's face. Now, at the time that I wrote that, I emailed that over to my mother. Several days later came the reply. She said, I like it, but I don't like it more than that crazy chicken roping poem. I could always count on a quick, and thoughtful, and often surprising tidbit from her. Now, one last thing I'll share. 1977, after my father was diagnosed with cancer, the two of them cooked up a plan. My previously never employed outside the home mother would need a trade in the coming years, a means to support us kids. It was decided she would become a nurse, which meant night school. Now, the nearest nursing college was an hour and a half drive away, and it would take 18 months to complete. And of course, no cell phone in those days. So every school night, without fail, my mother drove the 75 miles to school. She parked and she headed for the nearest payphone to make a person-to-person call to Miss Ailey. That's M-I-S-A-I-L-Y. Now, my father would answer the phone, and he'd hear the message from the operator and reply, "She's not home yet, but I'll give her the message." And, of course, the line would then disconnect. Now, those of you too young to remember a person-to-person call, well, you better ask your grandparents. And I suppose it's completely outside the realm of possibility that I might get one of those calls sometime soon. "Person to person for Miss Ailey," the operator would say. And before the line disconnects, I'll answer, "She is home, but she's too tired to talk." Because I know Miss Ailey, M-I-S-A-I-L-Y, well, that meant made it safely, and I love you. Now, we're going to wrap up the show this evening, but keep it here because there's more great programming coming up next. And don't forget, you're listening to member-supported programming on HT1, Houston's community station, KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, your host for tonight. From the whole team here at So What's Your Story, I thank you for listening. Be sure to join us every Wednesday night here on 90.1. Keep loving great stories and keep sharing great stories. Good night.
New to Houston? Welcome home. We're glad you've discovered KPFT. It takes a while to settle in, find the best route to work, and new places to eat, have fun, or exercise. It's also important to find local news that you can trust. Fortunately, public radio is a part of your life here too, and KPFT is definitely public radio with a Houston flavor. Since 1970, Houstonians have tuned in to KPFT for local music, news, and community events. We'll help you explore all the nooks and crannies of the Bayou City. And before you know it, KPFT is that trusted friend you rely on as you navigate your new home. Make it official. Become a member and make your first donation today. Call us or text GIVE to 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and hit the donate button. This is KPFT, Houston's community station.
KPFT has been a staple in the Houston area and surrounding communities for over 50 years. With an amazing volunteer staff, we are able to produce exclusive programming that you cannot hear anywhere else. From every genre to the local current affairs programs, our volunteers give 100% to the communities in which we serve. As KPFT continues to evolve, we ask for your input and we ask that you support the arts, music, news, international news, and current affairs that that you've come to know and love. With your support, we've been able to grow our programming and serve our communities more now than ever before. As time changes, isn't it good to know that you have a community station that does too? If you have not sent in your contribution to KPFT, now is a perfect time to do just that. Go online to kpft.org. Giving could never be easier. Thank you for your support of Houston's community station for over 50 years. 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1, Houston.
It all rolls into one. 1 p.m. Saturday, that is. That's when Deadbeat starts on 90.1 KPFT, a three-hour musical ride each and every week featuring the music of the Grateful Dead and surrounding family. 90.1 is not a strange place on the dial, but you can get shown the light just the same as you make those trips around the sun. So join me on Pacifica's 90.1 KPFT FM, FM HD1, Houston, each Saturday at 1 p.m., it's Deadbeat.
Relevant talk, information, and great music. This is Community Media, KPFT.
Skinny trees in Mississippi, dancing past the window, and I'm trying to gauge the distance between their swaying limbs and mine. They're all tied down by the truth of how our lives change as the wind blows, but my roots have turned to wheels, all my blood had turned to wine. I've known lovers like the autumn leaves, too early on the ground, and then there's those across the fingers while they swore to stick around. Right now I'm feeling empty, like a gas can in my trunk, and all my pistons fire slowly, my engines turn to junk. The dashboard started shaking, still I laid the pedal down, then the whole thing started trembling, my resistance came unwound. Damn things gave out on me when I needed it the most. Too many miles from where I'm bound, too many more to go. Love is like the fast car on the highway, breaking down on you all unaware. Sometimes you have to pull it to the shoulder, gotta slow it down to make a few repairs. Gotta slow it down to make a few repairs. I hear hard rain on the soft top, I smell white rain in the air, and it feels just like you're with me, oh, it's almost like you're there. Then the tow truck pulls behind me as you turn your head to speak, and I'm alone out on the interstate with a quickly fading dream. So we pull into the station and the driver drives away. My head winds like a spindle, wondering what I'll have to pay. They're inspecting and detecting all my cables, belts and fans, and I'm left here holding the pieces of all my best laid plans. Skinny trees of Mississippi, they are dancing in the wind, and all their swaying limbs releasing all their leaves to grow again. And every waking moment we learn better ways to grow, but then in every moment after we destroy its truth we know. Yeah, love is like a fast car on the highway, breaking down on you all in a way. Sometimes you have to pull it to the shoulder. Gotta slow it down, make a few repairs. Gotta slow it down, make a few repairs.